I'd like to thank the organizers for the invitation to talk here. I listed the collaborators which have been involved in the work I will report here. I think Lisa Glaser is here. Maybe Renate is here. No, she's not here. Thanks, heaven. she's okay. Yeah, well. So some of this work is published, some is not yet. So I guess I have half an hour. That's very little time, so I'll be very fast here. Anyway, these are just general remarks which are kind of this audience knows everything about. So let me just be extremely short here. So basically, what we want to use lattice theories to provide a regularization of what could be a theory of quantum gravity. The way to view this is in a Wilsonian framework. And I'll start by discussing, does it make sense to have a Wilsonian framework in a diffeomorphism invariant theory? So this will be my starting point. And after I have hopefully convinced you that it makes at least some sense, then I'll go to the results about DT, dynamical triangulation, and CDT. Let me report on here. So lattice field theories, they are kind of useful in deciding whether or not quantum field theory exists and is non-trivial. And this is the way I've been thinking about this. Unfortunately, we are not yet at the stage where we can determine critical exponents and so on, should they exist. But maybe we can get some hint of whether they exist at all, because this is, of course, a non-trivial question of significance. I mean, we can want to view a quantum field theory of gravity as an effective field theory, as was discussed this morning. And there, for sure, it exists in some sense as the nonlinear sigma model, etc. But does it really exist as a standalone quantum field theory with a non-trivial ultraviolet fixed point? That is less clear, but of course we have tantalizing evidence from the randomization group that it could be the case. And it would be very nice if we could confirm such things from a lattice approach. So there are of course various examples of where this has been discussed kind of using lattice gate theories. Let me just concentrate on phi to the fourth theory, because that will be in four dimensions, because that the picture there will be kind of relevant for what we are doing. So this is an example where, well, so this theory has an infrared Gaussian fixed point, and it's believed and almost proved, but not rigorously mathematically, that there's no non-trivial ultraviolet fixed point, exactly when the UV regularization is fixed up. So I, yeah.
Example,
because you can, as we have,
for example, in our paper last year, you can have a Lipschitz type completion in the UV by a supernormalizable.
Well, you can, of course. It's a flaw between z equal to 2 in the UV and an entropy field theory that ends up in the Gaussian. Well, you can embed it in a larger series. That's what you're saying. But I'm just talking about a phi to the fourth standalone series. Just
phi
to the fourth.
The fourth theory, so it's not Lorentz invariant. It only becomes Lorentz invariant in the infrared.
Phi to the fourth theory?
Lorentz non-invariant UV fixed point.
I'm sorry. I'm just talking about only phi to the fourth quantum field theory.
Correct.
Yeah. That's not Lorentz invariant?
Lorentz non-invariant kinetic term. You can make it flow to Gaussian Lorentz invariant infrared.
Yeah, yeah. But here I'm just talking about standard phi to the fourth theory in flat space.
This is flat.
Yeah. Well, I'm not exactly sure what I mean. So let me report about what has been done in the context here. So here I've written down the action for phi to the fourth theory, and I've just grabbed from a textbook the kind of phase diagram if you put it on a lattice. So you have two phases, symmetry broken and a symmetric phase. So the question that people asked, does this theory exist with a renormalized 5 to the fourth coupling being finite when the UV regularization is turned off? And this picture is basically from the book of nice book, I should say, of a Münster and Monway. So here is a critical line, so a critical surface in a higher dimensional coupling constant space, where the correlation length goes to infinity. So this is usually associated with second order, higher order phase transition in the lattice theory. This is also the case here. So along this line, there can be infrared fixed point and UV fixed points. So viewed as a in the bare coupling constant space, this UV fixed point is attractive when the ultraviolet cutoff is removed, taken to infinity, or lattice spacing taken to zero. So I've shown this here. So these are lines. These are just artistic lines of flow of constant renormalized 5 to the fourth coupling, which of course one has to define in some specific exact way what means by this, but let's not deal with that here. So the arrows here, they indicate an increasing correlation length. And when we approach the UV fixed point, the correlation length goes to infinity. So along here, the correlation length is always kind of infinite. So that's the general picture that you have. And what you want when you study the flow of constant GR, this is that you want to see a picture like this. That would say there is a non-trivial UV fixed point. So how does it look when you actually perform the analysis? So this was the famous work of Martin Lüscher and Peter Weiss. So we just make a redefinition to what is called the hovering expansion parameter. So these are just trivially related to the continuum notation I used before. In this way, it's kind of unimportant. The phase diagram, so is more or less the same. We have the bare 5 to the fourth coupling constant here, and the kappa coefficient here, which is related to the mass in this kind of specific way here, up here. So again, we have a second order transition line where the correlation length is infinity. So the dotted line I drawn here, this kind of symbolizes a line of constant correlation lengths in lattice spacings. So when you are below this, and above it, but let's stay in the symmetric phase, when you're below it, the line are almost parallel to this in reality. So what people have done using strong coupling, high temperature expansion, strong coupling expansion, Monte Carlo data simulations, they have constructed the flow of constant R. And the picture is as follows. So no matter where you start out, it never approaches this. It always goes to this line here. So what is this line here? Lambda equal to infinity. So this is a convenience to write it in this way here. Lambda equal to infinity is just the easing model. Phi squared is forced to be 1. This means that it's plus or minus 1. So it's just the easing model. So lambda is, so this line here is just a lattice easing model. And you see that keeping the renormalized coupling constant, it forces you to be at a space where the correlation length on the lattice is never infinite, and it's just the easing model. And anyway, this point here is the easing point, which we know is just a pure Gaussian point, which is non-trivial. So they didn't find any UV fixed point here, and they concluded that phi to the fourth theory as such defined in this way. So maybe Peter has a more fancy way to do it. But defined in this way here, it doesn't have a renormalized coupling constant in the conventional thinking of quantum field theory, which stays finite. So it doesn't exist as a UV complete theory. So that's basically, so we want to, so as we see, our diagram will look a little bit like this, and we want to investigate whether, in our case, we have a UV fixed point there. So we want to implement this. This is quite technically convenient for us. So we want to implement it as a finite size scaling. So what would it mean in this sense here? So here's the correlator between the phis, written in terms of physical variables. At large distances, they fall exponentially off with the mass. In terms of the lattice correlation links, psi, so psi is just the inverse of the normalized mass times the lattice spacing. So psi going to infinity means that the lattice spacing, it goes to zero. But we want to make this into a finite size scaling analysis. So we want to keep the continuum volume fixed. So the continuum volume is basically N4, the number of hypercubes in the lattice, times A to the fourth. So we want this to stay constant. So how does one ensure that it stays constant? It's clear that if you keep just the bare coupling constant fixed and take N to infinity, then of course, since A is related to the correlation length and it's not going to change if you do not change these coupling constants, then of course the volume will just go to infinity. So the way to keep this volume, continuum volume, finite is to say that the correlation length that we actually measure is some fraction of the dimension of our system, which is N to 1/4. So we keep, call this L, and we keep the correlation length divided by L to some constant, like 1/10 or 1/100, according to our taste. So effectively, this means, plugging in these variables, that the mass, the normalized mass times the force volume of this is a constant. And thus, taking N 4 to infinity, it means that the correlation length goes to infinity. So backstepping here in this diagram, it means that before we had an increasing correlation length here, we still have that, but now it's monitored by N. So N, had there been a UV fixed point, then N would go to infinity there. Now N increases here, but it stays finite when we come to lambda equal to infinity. So at no starting point are we able to find N equal to infinity limit. And again, so this is just a finite size way of phrasing that there is no real continuum limit here. Okay, so now we want to try to use this analysis in quantum gravity in the DT and CDT case. So Renard already explained everything about how to do this. Einstein-Hilbert action can be introduced with a Reggie prescription, and basically the partial will then be a summation or abstract triangulations of some sort using building blocks. So this is what I usually illustrate by this picture, I don't know, I must have some character trait of masochism, because of course this picture should tell you that I have a huge grant from Lego, but I have no grant, unfortunately, so it more shows my grand incompetence in this sense. So okay, but anyway, we have these building blocks in various dimensions, and I will maybe return to this picture a little bit later, because where you see that, so clearly these building blocks, they give a very good representation of this well-known person, except that if you actually want to calculate his surface area here, it will not fit with the real Einstein, because it will be much larger because of all these wrinkles that he has here. So I might return to that later. So in the CDT case, contrary to the DT case, an additional thing is imposed on the geometries, namely that we have a time foliation. And this is implemented explicitly in the following way, which Renard already explained, that we have our 3D spatial surfaces, and then they're separated by some links, which has a length, a temporal length, where we start out in Lorentzian, but then we can rotate to Euclidean space by taking this in the lower complex plane to negative values. And the Euclidean action then can be written in this very condensed way, because there's only this limited number, only these two building blocks here are needed to fill out a four-dimensional geometry. And in the case where alpha is equal to -1, then the action becomes exceedingly simple, namely just the number of vertices and the number of four simplices enters in this. So this is actually the Einstein action in this case. So we're going to use that. So an important point, but I clearly have very limited time, so I cannot really discuss it, but I'm happy to discuss it afterwards. So in principle, there are two coupling constants here, namely this kappa-4, which is like a cosmological coupling constant, multiplying the volume, and kappa-naught, which is the inverse bare dimensionless gravitational coupling constant, multiplying the number of vertices. And this delta is just a function of alpha. So this alpha parameter, this is just a parameter in this notation here. So it just shows that, well, we have some freedom of choosing the kind of tessellation here, the distance between these things. This is our choice. This has this parameter alpha. Of course, for given alpha, this is still the Einstein-Hilbert action. So in this sense, this delta, which is just a function of alpha, is not really a coupling constant. However, in the number interpretive lattice setting, it effectively will be promoted to a coupling constant. But as it appears here, it is not, but effectively it will. So I will be happy to discuss this with you afterwards, but it's an interesting, somewhat longer discussion, which I have done at other conferences, so I have not repeated here. So the starting point is this. We have our pass integral. We translate it into a sum over abstract triangulations associated with the links. There's a lattice distance A, the link length, which is our UV cutoff. And for instance, in the Euclidean, the DT case where all links are equal, that there's no time foliation, things become exceedingly simple. They actually just becomes this in any dimension, by the way. We are not really using this, but I cannot help showing it to you. I think it's conceptually very nice. So it shows to you that the partition function of quantum gravity, the sum here, can be written in the following way. First, we sum over all triangulations with a given number of d simplices and d minus two simplices. So in four dimensions, four simplices and triangles, because the curvature lives either on the vertices or the triangles, it's your choice. So first we sum over this is a certain number of triangulations, and then we sum over these numbers in D and D. And by writing the coupling constants like X and Y in this way here, then you see that the partition function of quantum gravity is nothing but the generating function for these numbers. So could we count triangulations with a given number of four simplices and triangles, we would have solved quantum gravity analytically. So I still find this kind of remarkable that this is the case. Unfortunately, we cannot do this, so we have to kind of rely on computer simulations, and that's what I will kind of report about here. So in 2D, though, situation is different, as I will describe. So, but one important point here. So clearly, we want a large number of four simplices and a large number of triangles to appear. So this is clearly a power series. So it's clear that we can only get a large number of these to appear as an important contribution if this number grows exponentially with nd and d. And in fact, this growth has to be fine-tuned with these coupling constants that we put in by hand. So we basically have to go to the critical point of this in order to obtain some critical. So the entropy of configurations here are as important as the action. So this is really built into this approach. And this will play a role later. And this is basically why this parameter delta, as I told you before, is effectively promoted to a coupling constant. No. So the first thing you can ask is, does it work? And there's a nice testing ground, D equal to 2. Oh, well, we have no graviton, but we still have a characterization invariant theory. And in a certain way, D equal to 2 is a maximal quantum theory, because the action itself is not there. I mean, so basically, except for a trivial cosmological term in two dimensions, each term has weight 1, and that corresponds formally to having h bar going to infinity, because that multiplies the action, one over h bar, and h bar going to infinity, the action is just 1. So this is a maximal quantum theory. So does this prescription work there? And the point is that exactly in d equal to 2, then you can count, you can perform this counting here. You can count the number of triangulations. So this is the number of vertices, this is the number of triangles, and you can count these numbers. And you can take the limit a going to 0, and you find agreement with continuum calculations, because d equal to 2 is, of course, also special, because this is the only dimension where gravity is actually renormalizable. So you can calculate these things analytically using conventional methods from quantum field theory, in fact, from conformal quantum field theory. And you find agreement. So the conclusion here is that the scaling limit of the lattice theory reproduces the result of a fully reprimatization invariant continuum theory. So that's my God. so that's good. So the next question I want to address is is the universality in the Wilsonian framework of lattice quantum field theory. So of course, this universality is essential for the whole Wilsonian program. And what is the driving force there? What is important is a divergent correlation links. Without that, no universality. And that was, of course, the kind of the insight of Wilson, basically. But how to think about a correlation links at all in a theory which involves quantum gravity and where we are integrating our geometries which define the correlation links. So let me give you a definition such that you can see that there's a chance that it can actually work there. So in ordinary quantum field theory, let's take a rotational and translation invariant K-theory, well, except for maybe boundary effects, we take a finite volume. We define the correlation length of a scalar field in the standard way, but we take advantage of the fact that it's translational invariant and rotational invariant. So when we calculate the correlator, we fix a point, then we take the average of all points which are separated some distance r, and then we average over all positions of this center point. That is just what I've done here. So that's, of course, completely trivial in this case where we have a fixed flat background. Now, however, the nice thing about this is that it generalizes to a diffeomorphism invariant metric theory. So for a given metric, now we have to integrate over the metric, but for a given metric, let's form the same object, except that now x minus y has to be replaced by the geodesic distance between x and y. But else we perform the same average, then we integrate over the fields for a given metric, and then we integrate over the metric. So this is a definition. Does it work? And is this a relevant kind of definition when we want to think about it in a Wilsonian context? If not, for me, it's difficult to think about how one can apply any Wilsonian way of thinking. So again, 2D gravity is a nice testing ground. So for instance, you can put the Ising model on random lattices, DT. It has a critical point, even if you average over lattices. It has a high order phase transition. And one can define the divergent spin-spin correlation links. One can measure it in terms of diffeomorphism invariant kind of geodesic distances as defined above. And one finds agreement between lattice and continuum calculations. I have no time for this. The only thing I would say is that there is a subtlety here, namely the geodesic distance. So of course, going back to this thing, this is a horrible object in quantum gravity because it's non-local. It's non-polynomial in G. It's just horrible to deal with. So clearly, in a quantum theory, this can scale anomalously, and it does. It's not even clear that it exists as a scaling operator, but it does. Also, the conformal dimensions of operators will change. So it's a beautiful example of interaction between geometry and matter here. But again, everything agrees with between lattice and continuum. Let me just flash this curve here because I'm very proud of this. This is a dream of any solid state physicist in terms of finite size scaling of these correlators for the Ising model. And the predictions agree with continuum calculations here. So conclusion, if quantum gravity in four dimensions exists as a standalone quantum field theory, there seems to be no conceptual problems in regulating it on a lattice in the way done by DT or CDT. So the last question about Einstein-Hilbert action, I have no time to discuss really here. So let me just jump here to the situation. So what is the situation for these lattice theories in four dimensions? This is where we're interested in applying them. And so the old DT approach, this is the action for the old DT approach. We have K4, the cosmological constant. But now we will make computer simulations for fixed n, so this disappears. So we have just one coupling constant, the gravitational coupling constant. And it turned out that, in fact, there are two phases there, but they are separated by a first-order phase transition. So we couldn't achieve what we wanted to do in the context of Wilsonian lattice theory, find a second-order or higher-order transition. So this theory was dropped. It was briefly taken up again. This 5 hours or five minutes? Okay, that's a surprise. So recently this was taken up again by Jack Laiho, who added higher curvature terms to this. And what he saw was some evidence of a new phase, and this new phase showed similarity to the CDT phases I will discuss in a second. So this was quite exciting for me in particular, maybe, since I have shares in both these theories, CDT and DT. And why was this particularly exciting? Because CDT is a theory which is formally a unitary theory because it has a reflection positive transfer matrix. And it does, and while adding higher curvature terms to it, as was discussed also this morning, it usually leads to a non-unitary series. But here, there was maybe a chance that one could guarantee, if it was in the same equivalence class as CDT, that it was a unitary theory. But unfortunately, it turns out that nothing new came out of this when we look closer at it. And I think Jack agrees with this. At least they have published a paper where they say they agree with us that there's nothing new, unfortunately. So DT still hasn't found any second order transition where one could discuss continuum limits. And Daniel said in this morning, of course, a priori, it is not clear just by choosing the Einstein-Hilbert action or some arbitrary curvature term that one will see such a transition, because it could be a very complicated thing. So the attitude here is in a way, in the same spirit as Daniel, I would say that we put in a simple action and then we see whether we can see a high order transition. If we see a high order transition, it is good, because usually this is associated with some continuum physics. If we don't see one, we cannot conclude anything. It could be that adding a lot of other terms which you haven't thought about, will give an interesting phase diagram. But now turning to CDT, we saw a phase diagram. So we have now two coupling constants, the gravitation coupling constant and this lambda here. And we saw three phases. And well, I think Peter will explain to us what they're all about tomorrow. But nevertheless, I have no time here to go into this. I've given them some names here. But this phase C had our interest because, as Renate probably explained to you, we saw some nice extended universes here. And more importantly, for the topic of this talk, there was a second order phase transition associated with this line here, which was actually in accordance with this magnetization picture also. So we wanted to understand whether there was a UV fixed point associated with this line. As I showed to you for the phi to the fourth theory, there was no UV fixed point associated with it, but here is there a UV fixed point associated with it. Here's a plot of the so-called volume profile. So we are now measuring, we are in phase C, and we look at the universe, and as it comes out of the computer, it looks like this curve here. There are some fluctuations, but basically it follows a curve like this, which is a very nice curve. We call it a kind of semi-classical background. I've drawn it here again. And this follows deep into phase C. It follows very closely this nice curve here. And the fluctuations, they follow something like this, where N4 is the four volume. So we have relations like this. As I tell you, this can be associated with some kind of mini superspace action can give this thing here. But you can say that these serve as our observables in the CTT case. I want to imitate what was done for the phi to the fourth theory. We want to define a path of constant continuum physics in the bare coupling constant space. So if you look at this curve, you see there are two parameters, omega, which determines the width of this thing here, and gamma, which determines the size of the fluctuations. So you should think about this as a real universe. You should think about it as having typically the size of maybe the diameter of 20 to 40 Planck lengths. That's what we estimate from the values of the coupling constant that we measure. So it's really fluctuating. This universe is really fluctuating. I'll be done in a couple of minutes. Yes. So these are the two parameters. And now, well, so it's never clear what do you mean by constant physics in gravity. So here we have made the simplest possible choice that we simply say the shape of the universe should stay constant when we change the bare coupling constants. So this omega as a function of the bare coupling constant, it should stay fixed. But it is not enough because if you look at this formula again, then you see that the scaling as a function of n4, so here I'm using this finite size scaling as a function of n4, is different for the height of this curve and the fluctuations. But if this is supposed to represent a real universe, then you want the ratio between this and this to be constant. So we want to enforce that also. And that implies that this gamma coefficient has to grow like n to the fourth while this is staying constant. So because this would be our line of physics. So what do we see? So here's again this phase diagram. So here's the down here is the BC line. Here is the AC line, which is not interesting because this is a first order transition. The curves in dark, these are curves of constant omega. And the color here is kind of changing gamma. So gamma was the coefficient of the fluctuations. So when we move out this way, then gamma increases. When we go down here, omega decreases. So the universe shrinks in time direction when we move down towards the critical line here. So, but these are the lines of constant omega. So the universe shape is invariant here. And now we would like this gamma to increase like n to the fourth. So we look at gamma and we see that it increases, but you see that it starts to be parallel here. So it seems that the same thing happens as in the phi to the fourth theory, that at some point the correlation length doesn't increase anymore. And this is the same thing here, the fluctuations, they do not increase anymore here. So in the beginning, they increase okay, but then they start to bend up here. So it is very difficult for us to, we would have liked the curve to go like this and go down here, but it doesn't. However, close to here, it seems that we are getting closer and closer to this point here, which is the triple point in the phase diagram. And it is very difficult for us and very frustrating that we cannot say anything more definite down here. But the problem about this is that the universe shrinks and these fits that we make to cosine cube and so on, they become increasingly difficult to do reliably if the size of the universe is only like 4 time slices, then there's not much information in such, we can claim that it fits cosine cube, but it could fit anything else also. But still, how can we then understand this? So here's an effective action which describes very well our data. And this can be mapped into the following continuum action. The kind of Hochschild-Lipschitz kind of kinetic term and a delta R cube. So this is the spatial curvature term here. And when we solve this to find this a classical solution under the volume constraints that we are using in the simulations, then we find an expression like this. So you see the cosine cube is described nicely by this. So there is a cosine cube. And in fact, the metric corresponding to this solution is the following here. So it's a deformed sphere with a deformation parameter here. So when we identify these parameters with the phenomenological ones, omega and gamma, we get this relation and we get that K1, which was this coupling constant here, the effective inverse gravitational coupling constant, it goes like this. So we have this identification here. So seemingly kind of keeping the so gamma going to so in a saddle point approximation using this action, we get that gamma squared goes like 1 over k1, which goes like this. So we want gamma to increase like n to the fourth. But at the same time, we want to have a non-trivial fixed point. So we want this a squared tilde, kappa tilde here to go to a constant. So the only possibility in this notation seems to be to take lambda to 1/3. So lambda to 1/3 in this action here, that's exactly the that's a special point in this this action. This is exactly the conformal invariant point of this thing. So in order to have something of constant physics, we seem to be forced to have this kind of scenario. This could also go to zero. In principle, we cannot decide this. This is a logical possibility, but certainly we are kind of forced. It seems very natural to take this this lambda to go to 1/3. However, to really disentangle this behavior, it's clear that we would have to address this region in much more detail than we have been able to do kind of presently. So this has been some kind of source of frustration for us. But Frank just told me that that indeed this result is consistent with the analysis using the randomization group flow. So in this sense, assuming that we can get better data, maybe for the first time we can make an explicit kind of connection between the kind of randomization group flow equations and our kind of lattice our lattice calculations. That would be extremely nice. However, the problem is, of course, that once we insist on this conformal invariant interpretation of the Hochhausen-Lipschitz Lagrangian, then it is much more natural to really see. So until now, we have had the attitude that time and space are treated more or less identical, but it seems much more natural to assume that time scales kind of different from space. I mean, that seems to be the natural ansatz that you should make here. But in order to make it so, but it is
that. Only 3 hours for questions. Yeah. Can you have
yeah, I'm done. So, but in order to do better, clearly we would have to address this region here in more detail. So that's where we are at the moment. So this is work in progress, and we have some ideas of how to study this kind of better using what is called the transfer matrix of CAR-CTT. I have no time to talk about this. Thank you very much for your patience.
Time for two questions, Daniel. You mentioned the work of Laihu and Kuhn, suggested that they actually effectively take higher derivative
invariants
into account. Yeah. Are you referring to, filling around with the measure term, which effectively is what they do?
Yeah. So we have basically, I was very excited about this. So we basically repeated these calculations. So they only did their first work was just a preliminary search, you know, where they saw something. So now you have to do it carefully. They did it carefully. We have done it carefully. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, there's nothing new.
My question is this. I mean, of course, when you fiddle around with the measure term, of course, this certainly does project and all sorts of.
So why is this related to higher curvature terms? This is your question, or what?
Well, I can imagine, but I mean, if there was an explicit answer, that would probably be nice to know. Whether you or your collaborators have contemplated the idea of kind of explicitly retaining, say, something like an R-squared.
So I didn't have time to, so this was one of the first things we did like 15 years ago. The problem with just doing it in a simple way is that this beautiful rhetoric prescription for piecewise linear manifolds, it doesn't really work very nicely for higher curvature terms, not the way that dynamical triangulation is monitored. So it just gave something, it was not useful. You had to make a more complicated construction to get a decent representation of higher curvature terms, and such representations were not useful for computer simulations. So we had to give up there. So this way of doing it is a very indirect way. So the curvature is located on the triangles. And by putting in a measure terms, which depends on the order of the triangles, you are effectively suppressing higher curvature terms in this naive rhetoric prescription. But of course, it doesn't specify exactly how you're doing it. You can put this up in the action as a logarithm of the order of these things, and then it would be an infinite series of higher curvature terms. It's just one realization, which is easy to make. You know. So that was what they did. And of course, it would have been exciting if you had seen a new phase structure there. So what people imagine, what they imagine and what we were dreaming of, was that there was a new phase here. So up here, universe looks like this. Everything is at the Planck scale connected, and then, yeah, that's all. And up here is branched polymers, something which looks like this, so we don't want any of these things. But there was a first order transition, so there was no intermediate, no soft transition between these. But if there was a new phase here, then there was a possibility of a nice triple point or something exciting like this, where you could take something. But it doesn't exist. This is all first order transitions. Yeah. According to
I'm very sorry, we're well behind schedule. Let's say first speaker again.